Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcasts12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcasts12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcasts12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed. Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcasts13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcasts13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcasts13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, and this edition is also live on video, so you can check us out. Me and my blotchy skin just come out of the shower. I'm shaved, though, which is more than I can say for John. You all right, John?
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. So we're going through some, one of your screeners. And what is it this week, John?
Oh, we're going to go back to what I would call fallen small caps. So these are what look like relatively good value small cap companies that are trading below, to a significant degree, their 52-week highs. And we've chucked in a few quality metrics behind there to make sure that they haven't fallen for all the wrong reasons, that perhaps they've been unfairly sold off.
Yeah, but I don't think in this market it doesn't really matter. It's literally, I was just saying before we came on, I didn't use the same kind of language, but it's literally, at the moment, the market seems to be rubbish, then a day of sort of not so rubbish, then maybe a little bit of a rally, then back to rubbish again, because, we're stuck in the middle of, a little bit of a banking crisis with SVB, and then that... is saying, has the Fed broken something? Will they need to step back on interest rate rises and all that stuff? But it's against a backdrop of uncertainty. And so it's a lot of, there's always worry out there, isn't it? Someone once said to me, worry is like a, it's like a vacuum. It always gets filled by something. There's always something to fill the worry gap. There's never no worry out there. There's always worry out there, but it's just the level of worry. And I suppose I was looking on the weekend, and I posted a blog post on the inversion of the yield curve. And I wasn't particularly, too worried. I mean, I still hold, I'm half sort of in cash pretty much at the moment. But I was looking at the yield curve, it's the 10 versus the 2, of course. And when it inverts, the shorter duration yield, obviously, is higher than the longer duration yield. And they say this is a bad thing. And I was looking back, looking at just weekly chart, and I thought, oh my word, that's worse than I thought. It's because I went back to 1980, and literally the yield curve inverted by about, I think it was minus 0.2. And then again, in the dot-com crash, around about minus 0.2, 0.4. And then a great financial crash, around about the same. Right now, it's literally minus 0.8. It's been a one whole percentage point inversion. So that's way worse than any other inversion we've seen since the 80s. And I thought, what's behind this? Is it, and that in itself, I literally just put this in context, why is this relevant? The last 10 recessions, had been predicted by, or it's been, you know, this followed an inversion of the yield curve. So it's quite accurate in the last 10 times. And I think even, you know, all recessions pretty much, it's very few times it's missed. You know, it's quite accurate. So you're thinking, have we seen the worst? Are we going back to the lows of October, you know, 2022, which we bounced off? And part of me thinks we could do. What I mean, you're sitting in a bit of cash, so you must think that as well.
Still mostly cash in the investment portfolio. You know, pensions are still just, I leave them to do what they do, the old corporate pensions. But yeah, largely cash, probably, you know, 75% cash.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit less in the investment portfolio. And I, you know, I did liquidate one the other day. I'd sort of had enough of watching it fall, which is Somero. It just seems to be struggling. There's no momentum in the business. Of course, it has bounced back since I sold it.
That was a guarantee, yeah.
But yeah, I'm just worried, you know, if there is a recession on the way, you know, cyclicals are going to get hit. I do think there is a counter argument to that, which I wrote about on the website, which is I think the companies that can potentially or have exposure to infrastructure spending might be okay. So you know, we're seeing a massive slowdown in residential construction, particularly here in the UK, but in America too. The governments will have to step in and plug that gap. So I do think infrastructure is quite interesting. There's one company on this list that I almost went for in that space, but didn't. We'll come on to that. But yeah, I think, you know, these are worrying times. You know, the fact that, you know, a relatively small bank can potentially cause the Fed to change course, you know, that suggests to me that they are worried about the economic consequences.
Yeah.
Of what they do. Certainly the market is, you know, there is a flight to safety, which we're certainly seeing in the bond market. There's been talk of recession for some time, and so far we seem to have dodged it. But the data is funny. It's, you know, it's very hard to kind of gauge what's going on, triangulate what's going on. And I think I've heard someone say, you know, we're in uncharted waters here. And I think after a long period of cheap money, we are. Just difficult to read.
And another indicator, really, of, you know, wider economic uncertainty and maybe even a slowdown, which is what's needed, I suppose, is, you know, oil, because it tends to rally in good times. And it also, as well, when you see a spike, they said when you ever see a spike in oil for the next 2 years, it tends to be a recession. Like I said, we have had a spike in oil. It went up to what, 120 or 110, but in fact, 125 bucks. It's just hit now $78 a barrel. And last time I hit this was in December 2021. So that may help longer term. But of course, the thought of that is that, you know, an economic downturn, people use less oil. So that's in there as well. So when I look at these companies, I do think at the moment, they're for the watch list. I'm not going to dive in on any company that, even if it's good, I think, you know what, you can afford to watch it for a while, you can put some chart alerts on it, and you can invariably guarantee it'll hit the lower, you know, support levels of those charts. And you can I do think there'll be, you know, an excellent opportunity. Part of me thinks we're going to have a big sell-off. And then, like, because we haven't really had a drawdown slowly in the last 18 months. But when it gets to the stage where fear turns to greed, you know, when things become so silly on a valuation level that people just start diving in anyway and say, I don't care, I'll hold it for 2 or 3 years, you know, 4 years, 5 years. So I think we need that. And we are getting to levels where companies are, you know, decent valuations, but they're not stupid valuations where it's almost a no-brainer. And I think we have to get that level, you know, where people say, I don't care, I'm just, you know, this company. There are companies out there that I think at the moment, even now, I'm looking at companies, you know, that pay dividends and have free cash flow. So that, you know, their assets are growing pretty much and they can afford to pay a dividend and sitting on them for a while as long as they, you know, have a good valuation. And in fact, I've been looking at a fund, a high dividend fund. So I'm just sitting on a bit of cash. Where to put it? I don't want to deploy it into individual stocks, but I do want some kind of return from it. But there we are. Anyway, let's have a look at this list. So on the list, so the screen, I'm losing screen, it's in the way there, but we're across. So we have quite a few here. So 14 stocks. I'll run through them quickly. Sanderson Design, SureServe, Castings, Vanel Holdings, Brickability, Transcend, Record, Michelmerz, Coral Products, Belvoir, MTI Wireless, Animal Care, Totally, and Tiny Build. We've covered a few before. I'm aware of Totally. I interviewed Wendy, the CEO, recently, and they said, you know, growth is good, top line. They have had costs increase a little bit due to strikes because they work in NHS providing sort of the call centres and all that stuff and providing staff to NHS. And they've had to take on sort of agency staff, which charge more, basically. And so their margins have been hit, but their growth is still there, top line. So, like I said, when that unwinds, that inflation, they've got to sort the strikes out. They've got to sort that out, the government. When those unwind, though, the inflation costs of hiring agency staff, it's fine because the top line is growing very nicely. But, a tiny bill. We covered that, didn't we?
And we did, in the gaming space. But, yeah, yeah. I mean, most of these companies, you know, whilst they're still off their 52-week highs, you know, nine companies on the list have actually bounced back over the last, you know, 5 or 6 months since the market started to rally in October. A few of them have been left behind, TinyBuild being one of them. Put out a statement the other day, didn't really have a lot of meat on the bone of that.
I'll just scan through it now. There's no figures in there at all. They're really trading update. No. You've got to put some figures in there, surely. But I suppose, you know, trading updates, like I said, you can really polish a bit of... in the rubbish, really, can't you? There we are.
There was a line in it, which I think perhaps, you know, is not what investors want to hear, which is that EBITDA is going to be broadly in line. And yeah, no one wants to see that word broadly at the moment. So you're in line or you're not in line or ahead, but, you know, broadly in line has the ring of not quite in line.
Yeah, how do you get me? Right, you're right. It's just definitive. It's either you're in line or you're not. Are you in line or not? Well, broadly.
But
it's,
exactly.
You know,
exactly.
If you've had your CFO come in, you said that. So where are you? We're broadly in line. So you're in line. Broadly. Tell me the truth. Are we in line or not?
I mean, I think not is the case there. And I think the market interpreted it as such. I mean, just going back to Totally, you know, this is actually Simon Thompson from my old manor, the Investors Chronicle. This is one of his favourites, and he picked this up on 20th of February. They have come under a bit of selling pressure because they lost a few big contracts. I say they lost the big contracts. The contracts were ended at four hospitals in Northwest London.
Yeah,
and they talked about unspecified legal reasons. Again, a phrase that no one ever likes to hear in an RNS. But his view is that, you know, this sell-off has been overdone. You know, they picked up a massive contract, 10 million for the NHS 111 contingent services, you know, and it's a critical part of the nation's infrastructure, you know, call handling for the NHS. You're right, the staffing issue is problematic for them, but, you know, there is a view out there that it's sold off perhaps a little bit too much.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, I mean, they are, what, now 35 million market cap. They've got cash around 6 million. They're forecasted 127 million this year, top line. They're forecasted 140 million next year, 145 the year after. And adjusted EBITDA 6.3, adjusted pre-tax of 3.7. So they're not expensive, are they, really?
No, no.
They're always going to grow. I mean, let's be honest, the NHS waiting lists are not going to shorten anytime soon. And so there's always going to be business there for them. And so, yeah, but like you say, in this market, you know, if you don't put anything, you know, out there that's exceeding expectations, you literally will drop. And that's it. You know, there's no mercy.
Exactly, but I mean, you're right that it's cheap, and you know that is what the screen is looking for. It's looking for you know a fair valuation. So you know, sub 15 PE forecast PE. We're looking for. We're also looking for companies that are forecast to grow top and bottom line. You know, so we want to see you know, say trading moving in the right direction, and we don't want them to be overly indebted. So, and turning a lot of their profit into cash. So they're the things we're looking for to hopefully give us that comfort.
Well, Coral Products come up with some news today about updated banking facilities. I know they have a little bit of debt, but they're expanding quite quickly. They acquired a couple of companies, and I don't think that's baked into the valuation, but they have got a little bit of debt there. And at the moment, I'm really worried about debt. You know, I try and avoid companies with any debt. If they do have debt, it's got to be covered by, you know, operating profit quite easily within a year. And so I don't want to, you know, what's the metrics? I mean, I see some people, companies saying they don't want to go 3x EBITDA, debt to EBITDA and all that stuff. And I'm less forgiving now. I want to see a lot less than that, because I just think it's so expensive. You have to refinance that. If you can refinance it, it's going to cost you a bit of money. So I just want companies with no debt or very little debt at all, you know?
I would tend to agree. We always used to look at a figure called gearing at the IC, which was debt as a proportion of shareholder funds, essentially. And, you know, you want that. I mean, you don't want to see much above 50%, you know, 25%. I mean, ironically, the big problem this week has not been companies that have too much debt, but the worry has been companies that have too much cash, particularly if they've left it in a particular place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that I've never seen that before. I've been around a while.
I don't know. I'm not very good at analysing banks' balance sheets because, you know, a lot of it is like, is a crossover between liabilities and assets, so same kind of thing. You know, what is what there? But it seems to me that HSBC got a good deal there. I mean, I was just looking at I mentioned it yesterday, but let's have a look at it. So let me just get into HSBC. But it's always one of the things. They've now got exposure to, you know, high-tech companies and all that stuff. But they paid £1 for it, which is reasonable. But they said SVB UK had loans of around 5.5 billion, deposits of around 6.7 billion for the financial year ending 31st December. They recorded a profit before tax of 88 million. SVB's UK tangible equity is expected to be around 1.4 billion. Now, I don't know much about banks, but that seems like quite a good deal to me, isn't it?
Yeah.
1.4 billion tangible equity, making a profit, and yet they paid £1 for it. I mean,
I think back to deals that are done quickly and, you know, where due diligence has been skipped.
Maybe it was such a good deal that we're going to nick this before anyone else does, you know.
Quite possibly.
I assume there are people, they just be so big. I assume there are people, analysts, forecasts, or, you know, analysts all the time looking at the banks and looking at their numbers. So this wouldn't have been we start researching on the Friday evening and we buy it on the Sunday. It would have been like, they would have been well aware of this bank for a while. I assume that, you know, they have a department looking at acquisitions and all this kind of stuff. So maybe already run the rule over it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. They are so big that, you know, this is never going to cause any problems, even if there are some nasties lurking beneath the surface. And it does, as you say, give them a strong position in, yeah, what is an important part of the economy. You know, the startup economy is massively important. It's where the companies that we invest in on AIM, you know, come from originally. So, you know, it's a good move, and it, you know, it provides some stability to that industry, which is what we want to see. Particularly in the UK, it's fintechs that are, you know, really quite important as a startup sector.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so listen, I quite like Totally, because I think there's predictable revenue there, and even though the margins aren't big, I think, you know, they'll continue to do quite well, especially when the inflation sort of rolls off a bit, because they are growing top line. And like I say, that never-ending queue for the NHS is never going away. But I'm a bit stuck, really. I mean, I know I looked at Record before, but in my mind, it's very similar to Argentex. And I think Argentex is a better player. It's a bit smaller as well. And the margins are very good. I mean, the value is very good as well. I do hold Argentex. But I know what you're going with, John, and I think I'm going to go with the same thing, because I did look at them recently on a webinar and I run numbers over them and I quite like them, really. What are you going with?
Yeah, well, we're talking about Sanderson Design, obviously. Posh wallpaper and fabric and such. I mean, it did this actually, I've chosen this one before. Yeah. So we did a Petrosky screen, essentially a value screen, back in August last year, and I picked Sanderson then, and it's had a really good run since then. It's up about, you know, about 20%. But I think looking at these companies, I did have a look at Van El, because I'm interested in infrastructure. They're a big groundworks specialist. You know, Mitchell Marsh is a company I know pretty well, but we're really worried about residential construction. You know, we saw some figures, and I wrote about this on Vox earlier this month. You know, brick deliveries in the start of the year have just fallen off a cliff. Mm. And we know that the house builders are going to be really, really reining in their construction. So, yeah, Sanderson Design. Why Sanderson Design? So I've got a long list of ballpoints, which is a rare thing to have. So the wealthier customer base, I think that's That's good. Mm-hmm. We know that, you know, the squeeze in living standards will be most harshly felt in the sort of the lower end of the economy. Sanderson sells posh wallpaper to wealthier people. Balance sheet's good, lots of cash there. Growing in the US, which is important. So, you know, it's expanding its business internationally. And there's lots of initiatives behind the scenes that are really, really helping that happen. Loving the licensing deals. So it's just done a very large deal with Next, and Next are a key partner. And licensing deals are amazing because they're essentially 100% profit. License design, somebody else goes away and does the work and you get your royalty. You know, it's what people like about Games Workshop as well, actually, that shift to a licensing and royalty business. Got some British manufacturing in there, which is always nice to see, given that sort of plays into the nearshoring trend. Valuation, very, very low. Gross margins, nice and high. And shares are in an uptrend. What's not to like?
Yeah, well, sort of interesting is that if you look at the interim results, is that it was pretty much flat, around 57 million, but the operating profit grew by 9% or 10%, you know, and the net profit growth of 11%, which is quite nice. I mean, to me, they're getting a bit more efficient, you know, and maybe tightening the belt a bit, which is, and like I say, so the growth wasn't there, but you wouldn't expect that in a year where it's quite scary. But they held their own. It didn't. The growth, top line growth, didn't dip. But their other margins improved, which is quite nice to see. And like I said, very little. Do they have any debt at all?
No, I don't think so.
Whatsoever. So this is good. And it is a worrying area. But you think, oh, hang on a sec. But you have to understand there are people out there. Plenty of people who are, okay, they're keeping an eye on costs, but it's not really affecting that much. Most of the stories we get, you know, from the mainstream media are people who are literally at the lower end of the income bracket and are suffering badly, and that's happening, of course. But there are still people going out there, spending away, you know, having holidays and can quite afford to carry on the way they are. And, you know, they wouldn't be shopping here if they were affected. So, you know, but there we are.
It's hard to know. It's interesting.
It's hard to know. Again, it's the outlook, isn't it, going forward? I mean, you know, how is it? How are they going to do over the next 6-12 months? That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I live in a sort of relatively well-to-do part of the world. Certainly, aspects of you've got lots of second homeowners down here, and you know, you can't get a build around here for love nor money because everyone with money is doing something. You know, it's but the high end is still very, very active. I mean, you know, the deals with Next are quite interesting because they actually take, you know, what is quite a premium product into a broader market. So, you know, that's a good thing to see as well. But yeah, I mean, the outlook is, I mean, the forecasts look fine. You know, I mean, you know, obviously delivering and on that is a different matter altogether. But the forecast growth is, I mean, they're not asking for much. Analysts are not asking for a great deal. It's a slow burn growth story, but you know, have a look at their half year presentation, which is the last full presentation they gave. You know, the initiatives they've got underway. You know, this is a really well run business.
Yeah. Well, I'm just seeing. In fact, they broke a forecast. What 112 million top line this year, 112 for 2023, 116 for 2024. So a slight bit of growth there. But like I said, they're holding their margins, which is quite nice.
And that's the licensing. So licensing will really help with that.
Yeah,
so,
the margin, yeah.
Because, you know, that's all flying straight through to the bottom line, anything that comes through a licensing deal.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at the chart, you're right there. From literally, I'm looking at September 2022, hit the low of 87 pence. And then it's been trending upwards, in an upward channel, you know, and a series of higher lows. And the highest has got 142. It's now down to 123. It'd be interesting to see if they break that lower channel of 120. 120 is whether they go lower or not, because that's been the sort of upward trend of that. But who knows? In this market, it's an awful market.
And, it is.
And I think, you know, if you look at some of these good businesses and just sit on the sidelines for a while and wait, because, you know, the market's going in your favour if you've got cash. You know, just sit back and wait. But, cool. Yeah. All right, marvellous, John. Any ideas for stocks or screens, let us know, because we're always digging around for screen ideas, and we'll deliver it maybe week or week after next. But, Yeah, I think you're right to be sitting on cash, John. We're going through a wobbly period. Why? I mean, even today it's quite wobbly. I mean, is there some kind of Fed announcement out or something like that? Or is it something going on?
Well, it's CPI numbers yesterday.
But they were in line, weren't they? You know, so we rallied off that a little bit.
Yeah, they were and they weren't. I mean, you know, it depends what reading you're looking at things on. You know, there's certainly some measures that suggest inflation is proving a bit stickier than expected. You know, it is all a bit of a mess. You know, the central bankers are in a very tough place. You know, they don't want to break the economy, but they don't want to let inflation run riot. And it seems, you know, what levers can they pull without doing one or the other? It's tricky. And
what we should do then is put the ones we sort of pick on a list. And so we'll start sort of now. Maybe start with 123. Will it go higher or lower by the next time we talk about it? So I'll jot them down actually as well if you can. So we'll do that. Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that, John. Speak next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.